Sammy Haney. I play Esperanza on Netflix's Raising Dion, and you're listening to the Fascination Street Podcast.
I believe that everybody has a story, and I'm fascinated to hear them. So come with me as we take a walk down Fascination Street.
Welcome back, Streetwalkers. This episode is with actress Christy Ferris. If you're a fan of soap operas, you may remember her for being on the soap opera Passions from a few years ago. She was on there for a while and still gets recognized from that show to this day. You've seen her on Scrubs and all three seasons of the TV show Monogamy, which you can find on Amazon Prime. In this episode, we talk a little bit about why she wanted to be an actress and how old she was when she figured out that that's what she wanted to be. It's pretty young. I can't even remember being that young, much less knowing what I wanted to be for the rest of my life at that age. In this episode, we also talk about who her mentor is, how they met, and how impactful he has been to her in her career and her life. She tells a great story about Sidney Poitier. I'm not even going to spoil it because it's hilarious. Of course, we talk a bit about her TV show Monogamy, but we also talk about a couple of talk shows that she's in the middle of putting together, and they both sound really intriguing, and I can't wait to see both of them. I hope they both come through. I can't thank Christy enough. She was up at 7 o'clock in the morning her time just to make sure that we got this done, so I really, really appreciate that, Christy. Thank you so much. I hope you have a blast on all of your travels. We talk about where she's going in the episode. And this is my conversation with actress, director, writer, and hilarious storyteller, Christy Ferris. Yeah, talk to me, yeah. Welcome to Fascination Street Podcast, Christy Ferris. How are you doing today?
I am excellent early this morning.
Oh, no, that's right. It's stupid early where you are.
Uh-huh. But I'm an early bird, so this is perfect for me.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely.
Christy, what I like to do is to help the listeners understand how the guests got from where they were to where they are. I like to start off with the really hard questions, like, where were you born and raised? Where'd you grow up?
I was born and raised in Las Vegas, Nevada. I spent a ton of time in Ohio. My family lives there. So I traveled back and forth from both locations. But my dad was in the military, so I was born on Nellis Air Force Base.
Vegas. There's only like three people who grew up in Vegas. And one of them is Jimmy Kimmel.
Was he?
Yeah. His whole family is like they're born and raised in Vegas or whatever.
Oh, wow. I never knew that.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
An actor. When I was four.
Really? 4 years old?
Yeah. There was no other option. I knew what I wanted. It was something that was just in me, and the determination, along with my mom doing everything she could to make sure that I was at a school that had what I wanted, which was truly a blessing. You know, she made a lot of sacrifices in that way. It wasn't like it was performing arts schools or anything like that, but they just had great programs for acting. And that really helped me a lot when I was trying to pursue.
So I don't know if you can remember, because I certainly can't remember being 4 years old, but what made you want to be an actress?
I just remember the one memory that I have was being in preschool and the teacher asking, you know, does anybody know what they want to be when they grow up? And I remember raising my hand and she called on me and I was like, I want to be an actress, a singer, a model, a teacher, and a gymnast. And I do all of those except for gymnastics because I just didn't practice and I was not good enough. I thought I was going to be Nadia Comaneci or Mary Lou Retton or one of those ladies and I didn't even come close. So that was the only thing I did not achieve, but the rest of it, I definitely tapped into. So I just remember that moment, you know, at 4 years old.
How tall are you?
5'5".
How tall is Simone Biles? Like 3'11"?
probably like 5'1", you know, something.
So
like,
even at 5'5", you might be too tall to have been a gymnast. So maybe you made all the right decisions, lady.
Yeah. Listen, trust me. Once I fell one time, I was like, yeah, I'm good on that, when I was on the balance beam. And then when I watched one girl fall off of the vault, you know, and broke her leg, I was like, yeah, mommy, I'm good. What's next? What's next?
So you said that you, one of the things you wanted to be was a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, by process of elimination, you are a singer?
I do sing. I do.
All right, hit it.
I've been trying to tell myself I don't need you.
How gorgeous is that? I mean, it's super rude because you just said you don't need me, but whatever. That's cool.
Yeah.
How pretty.
That's 7 o'clock in the morning without warming up my vocal cords. That's me rolling out of bed talking about, okay, I got to do an interview this morning. Yeah, I'm here. Sing? Sure, I can sing.
I wish everybody could have seen the faces you were making just now. That's awesome. So you grew up wanting to be an actress, and your mom did everything humanly possible to make sure that you got into the right acting classes and, well, the only acting class at your school, and mm-hmm. and things went that way. So I know that you went to Emerson, but why Emerson?
So let me just go back to when you brought up my mom stuff. And this is what I mean when I say my mom did what she had to do, because we had moved to a new area and my mom went to the school and said, you know, is there an acting program or like plays? Do they do plays at the school? And the principal said, there's only one teacher who does it, but his class is full, because he was really popular. Everybody wanted to be in Mr. Reese's class. He was like the best teacher. And my mom was like, okay, great. My daughter's going to be in that class. And they were like, ma'am, the class is full. There's no way that we can put her in the class. And she was like, yeah, we'll be here tomorrow morning in Mr. Reese's class. We'll see you tomorrow. And we left, and I was in Mr. Reese's class. And I remember Mr. Reese saying, you must be a special child, because nobody can get into my class. It's like a waiting list. And so that's what I mean when my mom was like, yeah, no. But as far as Emerson, I always thought I was going to go to NYU. Like, that's the school that I really wanted to go to. And one of my friends from high school, I was asking him what schools was he applying to. And he was like, I'm applying to Emerson. And so I looked it up online and sent in my resume and my, you know, sent in my application. And when I had the audition, because I had to do an acting monologue and I had to sing, when I went in.
Sing, hit it.
Yeah. I wouldn't do it again, but I might embarrass myself. When I went in for the audition, he literally told me on the spot, what do I have to do to get you into the school? And 900 students auditioned for this program, but only 28 were selected. And I knew on the spot that he wanted me. I didn't have to wait for a letter. And so, you know, when somebody strokes your ego like that, I'm like, that's the school I'm going to.
Absolutely. That's what I would do.
Yeah, that's how I ended up there.
That sounds like, I guess, sort of how they recruit athletes in college, right? They woo them.
They woo.
They wooed you.
Yeah.
They impressed you instead of you trying to impress them. Or maybe it was a mutual impression.
Yeah. Because I know everybody else had to wait for their letter, but.
Aha, suckers.
You know, I was like, I didn't have to sit there and go, did I get accepted? You know what I mean? I didn't have to do any of that. Although I did not get into NYU, which really sucked. I was devastated over that. But I did get into DePaul as well, and Howard, and, you know, a couple of other schools, which was...
Why were you so disappointed you didn't get into NYU? You weren't going to go there anyway.
That's where I know. But trust me, if I would have got into NYU, I'm sure I would have gone, just because I love New York City. It was more about being in New York than anything else.
So you didn't even really care about Tisch? You just wanted to be in New York?
I just wanted to be in New York. You know,
go to New York. What are you doing? Nothing.
I know. But
what are you doing today? You should just get on a plane and go to New York today.
Oh, I go to New York all the time. I'm good now.
There it is.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, I go. But I'm glad that I made that decision, because a lot of my friends that went to NYU, you know, they didn't have the same experience that I had. So I think I made the better choice.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
What is your favorite memory of being at Emerson? Girl, I just told you it was when I got accepted.
I know. Right? When Kristen Linklater, she passed away last year. She's a really famous acting teacher. She wrote a book called Freeing the Natural Voice. I had her for a teacher. When I did my performance and she looked me in my face and just, she cupped my cheeks like this. And she just told me how incredible I was as an actor. And she doesn't do things like that. I'll never forget that, because when I started to get other teachers who weren't as supportive, I would always go back to that moment and say, well, Kristen Linklater said I was amazing. So I don't know what you guys are talking about. And so that kind of kept me going. But that's one of my best memories.
So you've had some really good and personal interactions with some wildly impressive people over the years. Miss Linklater, like you just said, but also the internet told me that, I don't know if he still is, but at least for a while, Ted Lange was your mentor.
Oh yeah. Ted Lange is my mentor. He is my Ace Boon Coon. He is my go-to when I need encouragement or advice. If you guys don't know who Ted Lange is, especially if you weren't born in the 70s or 80s or before that, Ted Lange played Isaac on Love Boat, really famous bartender. You know, he's still famous to this day. I've done so many plays with him, and he was the one that actually encouraged me to direct. You know, he's the one that gave me the opportunity. He couldn't do the experience. And so he sent it my way and was like, hey, why don't you ask Christy? And then the directing started. I first did a musical and then a short.
I think I want to talk about that short in a minute. I think if that's what I'm thinking of, then we're going to hit that in a second. How did you meet Ted? As far as I can tell, because I've been looking, that dude ain't on social media as far as I can tell, because I would have reached out to ask him already if he could be on my show, but I can't find him. How did you find him?
Oh, no, he's on there. He's on social. He's on Facebook. Instagram he's on, but he doesn't really check it as often, but he's very active on Facebook. I was on this panel for soap opera actors at this event. And as I was leaving, one of my friends, Michael Ojakwe, who was a writer on Sister Sister and Eve, a whole bunch of great shows, he saw me as I was leaving and he was like, one of our hosts did not show up for this event and we need someone to fill in. Can you do it with Ted Lange? And I was like, sure. And so he and I had this amazing time. And then like 2 or 3 weeks later, he called me. He was like, I wrote this part that I think you would be perfect for. Will you come in and do this reading? And I was like, sure. And then the rest is history. I've been in every single one of his shows from that moment on. He's like, I wrote this great part for you. And then, of course, I'll go, oh, my God, I'll read it. And I'm like, oh, great. Let me see. And then I'll read it and go, oh, my gosh, I can't do this. And he's like, yes, you can. And then I would do it and people would give me standing ovations. And he has really built my confidence as an actor. And he has taught me to accept the praise, because I would always, no, it wasn't that good. No. And he has literally pulled me aside and actually got a little perturbed with me. It was like, stop doing that. And so he helped me to accept the praise and to realize how talented I really am. And I'll always be grateful for that. But yeah, he always gives me these roles. And the best part about doing these plays with him, all these incredible celebrities come to the show.
I would imagine.
You know, like Lou Gossett Jr., Robert Guillen, Richard Roundtree, Judy Page, you know, Beverly Todd, like all these famous Black actors come to the show, and I'm just sitting there in awe because they're loving what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Ben Vereen. And they're like, oh my gosh, that was amazing. You know, Marla Gibbs from 227, but also
the Jeffersons.
Jeffersons, you know, all these people coming up to me and tell me how great I am. I'm like, oh my God, you guys paved the way. You know, that's the joy.
Do you think that Ted writes those parts specifically to grow you at your art? Because like you said that, like you'll look at him at the parts and you're like, I can't do this. And he's like, yes, you can. Do you think he does that on purpose just to expand your...
Yes, exactly. Because he always says that he writes it with me in mind. And how incredible, man, I think I just took that in and almost made me cry. Like right then.
I know, I could see that in your face. I was about to interrupt you. I'm like, don't cry.
I know. Oh, I was gosh. Like, I mean, when you think about somebody is writing something specifically for you because
to they grow have, your skills. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's
that shows how much he believes in you. Yeah. He believes in you more than you do.
Oh, listen, trust me. Cause when I see the material, I'm going, what?
Hey, Streetwalkers, here's a word from our sponsors.
Yeah, I'm not one of the dadgum historians, patsies, dreamers, and want to be on Route 66. I'm the real deal.
That's Harley Russell, the most colorful citizen of Eric, Oklahoma. He's just one of many characters you'll meet this season in Vanishing Postcards as we motor west cross-country on Route 66.
There's so many stories on Route 66 that are going to disappear. And so one of the most valuable things I think about traveling Route 66 is to hear people's stories.
From an eating contest in the Texas Panhandle to a morning on the Santa Monica Pier, we'll experience much of 66 while exploring how its past, present, and future are revealed through the people and places you'll find driving it today. I'm Evan Stern, and invite you to ride along by following Vanishing Postcards wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get back into it.
I had a monologue that was 9 minutes long. 9 minutes.
Wow.
And then you have to keep the audience engaged. And all I kept thinking was, there's no way I can do this. And when I finally got it, that moment that clicked, it was on and popping. And I remember people coming up to me and saying, I just wanted to run on that stage and give you a hug because it was so intense. It was about a woman who eventually ends up getting raped and there's nobody else on stage, but I acted out. I act the rape out.
Oh my God.
And people, you know, they're like, I almost forgot I was watching the show and I wanted to run on stage and give you a hug. And so many people said that to me. And the funny thing about it is that I only had two scenes in this whole entire show. It was like 2.5 hour show. And I have like this 9 minute monologue and then I have like a 3 minute, another scene. But they were like, that was amazing.
Wow. Well, check you out.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool. Way to go, Ted. But let's move on. Tell me about being a soap actress. So you were on Passions and I have heard it described that it is the hardest job to be on the soap because you're filming like every day forever. But then also that it's the quickest way to improve your skills as an actress. Tell me about your time on Passions.
Yeah, Passions was amazing. It was truly a blessing. You know, it was my first major gig. It's challenging because you can shoot 3 episodes at one time, and all of them are the same dialogue, but just the words are a tad bit different. And the reason why they do that is because the average person watches soap operas 2 to 3 days a week. So that's why they don't move so fast on the storylines, because then people will get lost. And so that's why you'll have the same storyline for the whole entire week, but just a little bit different. So you have to memorize these lines. And they're like the same, but they're different. And so you have to make sure that you can do that. You'll shoot like 3 episodes in a day and then come back and do the next day and do another couple of episodes. And it's a lot of material. So you really have to be on your toes. There was one time where I just couldn't get it right. And they were like, okay, snip, 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 snip. And they cut that scene. They were like, okay, no, don't worry about it. It's fine. And I learned my lesson and I never did that again. It was just a bad day, one of those bad days. But for the most part, I was really on point. And the fans are amazing. They're still fans to this day. And I went to Paris once and ran into these Canadians and they were like, "Oh my God, you're Simone from Passions." And I was like, "Oh my God, you guys know that show? That show was like 15 years ago." It's amazing that people still care about that show.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Now, I want you to tell me an audition story, but this one is a little bit specific and there's kind of a twist in it. Ladies and gentlemen, Christy is going to tell us a story about how, wait for it, she beat out Sidney Poitier to get her role on Scrubs. And action.
Okay. I was auditioning for Scrubs. We were all auditioning. They actually wanted someone else. But when I found out who that person was, who I knew, I did everything I could to make myself better in the areas that she was weak in. And so when we got to the final audition, Sidney Poitier's daughter, whose name is Sidney Poitier, she went in the audition before we did. Now, the material wasn't super funny. So when she went in, we all heard this big, huge laughter. And we're all looking at each other like, what in the world did she do to get that big old laugh? And this is where I say I adore her. Because when she came out, she could have just been like, bye, I nailed it, good luck. But that's not what she did. She came out and said, "Oh, just so you guys know, they were laughing at something else. So don't let that get into your head." And then we all kind of went, whew. And so by the time I got in there, I went in and Bill Lawrence was in there, who was the executive producer. Zach Braff was in there. Casting directors were in there. And my goal was to get them to say how incredible my audition was. Bill Lawrence was like, "Just so you know, if I don't laugh, please don't take it personal. It's not funny. I hate the material. I can't wait for it to be over." And when I did my audition, he laughed out loud and he was like, "Wow, you are really funny." And then I booked the role.
Nice. Now, I don't want you to tell me who it was, but you started that story with you knew who they were looking at. And you wanted to beat them out for that role. Is this your nemesis?
Oh, no. I don't have any nemesis. At the end of the day, it all goes back and forth. One minute, one person gets it. The next minute, somebody else gets it. It's a cycle that you just cannot compare yourself to other people or compete with anybody else. Because it would drive you crazy. Yeah.
No, I'm sure.
She actually hired me on some projects. You know what I mean?
Oh, nice. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Tell me about In Search of O.
Ooh, In Search of O is a one-woman show that I wrote after I went through a divorce. And it's about waiting until marriage at 27 to have sex and the fantasy versus the reality of that experience. So it's a quite funny story. And I can't say it this morning. It's about my life. How about that?
Love it.
Loosely. Yeah.
Are you still doing it? Did you do it?
I haven't done it in a couple of years. And then the pandemic came. I almost did it.
What pandemic?
I know, right? I almost did it during the pandemic online, but then some things came up. So I'm hoping to be able to do it again or direct somebody to play the part for me.
Got you. Well, in that case, how's your talk show coming?
Ooh, well, depending on which one we're talking about.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. So Black People Shit is just talking about what's trending in the Black media, which I put it on hold for a little while because I'm working on another show that is kind of like a social conscious show. So bringing people from different walks of life to come together and have a discussion. So that's my next project.
A discussion about what?
Just about life and things that people are dealing with and trying to see it from a different perspective.
Oh, nice.
That we can have empathy for people. Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
Where is this going to be? Either one of these shows, or where would you like them?
Yeah, right. I would love for it to be kind of an online type show. We're still in talks with a couple of different networks that have online platforms. So I'm hoping to shoot it in July. Would be the goal and then pitch it to a couple of different places. So I'm going to shoot a couple of episodes and then see what happens from there.
kick ass. Well, I know you're not supposed to say break your leg. No, you're not supposed to say good luck. You're supposed to say break your leg. But since you got two of them, I hope you break both your legs. How about that?
Thank you.
Real quick, can you tell me about what it was like to direct deaf actors?
Yeah, it was challenging. It was rewarding. And it was probably one of the best experiences that I've had in a long time. I haven't felt that much joy since the first time that I was on stage myself. To be able to direct actors and watch them shine, and what Ted has done for me, I was able to do for them, to make them go, wow, I never knew I could do that. But working with two deaf actors has made me more of an advocate, because I didn't realize that I did not know that world in that community. And now I'm like fighting for everything. Like, you guys should have closed caption. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm like this advocate for everything. Now we don't realize that we separate ourselves. And now I have a new group of friends that I never knew I was missing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
One of my previous guests is a woman named Emma Faye Rudkin. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, she's probably 22, maybe 23, something like that. She is a deaf person. She was born deaf, and I don't even think she was 18 yet when she started this whole charity called Aid the Silent, where they do all of the things to help the deaf community sort of interact with the regular community. Like, they help raise money for cochlear implants for kids who can't afford them. And they send kids to deaf camp, and like, they just do all this amazing stuff. So if you're ever, I don't know, on a game show looking for a charity, Aid the Silent is a good one. They're doing really, really great work. And it is a young woman who did this. Like I said, I don't even know if she was 18, and you know, she's very faith-based, and this is her mission, and she's killing it. So get in there. Tell me about monogamy, you know, not monogamy in general, but about the TV show that you're on.
Yeah. Monogamy is very special and dear to my heart. It's about four couples who are going through marital issues and decide to do a spousal swap so that they can try to see if they can work out their marriage. And it has this cult following that we were not expecting whatsoever. And it's phenomenal. The actors are phenomenal. The storyline is very unique. And you watch these actors go through crazy, crazy, crazy challenges. You definitely see an ebb and flow with these characters. So there's a lot of growth.
And am I right that there's three seasons currently and a fourth one coming? Is that right?
We're still in negotiations, Steve, to see the fourth. I'm not sure if it's going to get picked up or not. I have a feeling that it's moving on, which really sucks, because the network has grown because of our show, because we were one of their shows.
What network is it?
It's called All Black. And you can find it on Amazon Prime, and it'll take you to All Black.
Amazon Prime will take me to
All Black.
A whole nother network?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So All Black has grown as a network. They've grown their audience base partly because of your show. And well, I hope you don't need a third broken leg. I hope that this just sails right through.
There you go.
What brought you to that show? Was it just a regular audition, or?
My friends wrote in, directed it and produced it. And they called me and asked me, did I want to be a part of it? And before I read the script, I was like, of course. And they were like, well, don't you want to read the script? And I was like, oh, I should do that. But yeah, I'm on. So I ended up taking it.
I think it's really funny. Well, depends on how you define funny, but I think it's funny that you wrote a one woman show about basically waiting until 27 to have sex. And then right, you're on a show called Monogamy, which is about swapping.
Yeah,
exactly. That's hilarious.
Exactly.
You're doing all the things. Besides Monogamy, what do you got coming out soon? What's going on, man?
I mean, right now I'm in the creating process, doing a little bit more directing. And then of course, creating that show, the social conscious show, Walk a Mile in Their Shoes.
Is that what it's going to be called?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so So I have those, another project. And then at this moment, it's just taking care of myself and doing some traveling. You know, I'm getting ready to go to Puerto Rico in a couple of days, taking my mom for her 70th birthday. Then I'm going to Egypt and Morocco. So whoa. I think it's finally a place of me taking care of me and just enjoying life. And then, you know, come back and continue to keep doing what I do.
Okay, I'm going to give you a travel tip. Nobody ever does this, so pay attention. Take pictures.
Absolutely.
Take pictures because, you know, well, for a whole host of reasons, but in 20, 30 years, you're going to have those pictures of you and your mom in Puerto Rico. And, you know, you're going to have all these pictures of you in Egypt. And who knows what the world's going to look like in 20, 30 years. You're going to have all these memories and all these places. Oh my gosh. Traveling is so much fun. I love it.
Amazing.
I think it's awesome that you're taking care of yourself and doing a little bit of traveling. I feel like you've earned it. You've worked hard to get where you are. So take some time and, you know, like Ted said, accept what you've earned, you know, whether it's praise or even a little bit of time to go visit some places.
Exactly.
Christy Ferris, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day and your hectic schedule to hang out and let us get to know you a little bit better on Fascination Street. I really appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you having me on. I'm honored and thank you so much.
Real quick before we go, can you tell everybody where they can find you on social media?
Just Christy Ferris on Instagram, Facebook. I'm not that active on Twitter, but yeah.
What about TikTok? Are you on TikTok?
I am not.
Oh, thank God.
I really should have gotten on there. And I just was like, I can't do another social media thing, but I really wish I would have gotten on there.
You know what you can do? I mean, it's not too late. You can just take little videos of all of your travels in different places and just post them. You don't have to say anything. That's just post true. Them. That's what you should do. Okay. That's what you see. That's what I do. I just tell people what they should do. Like an a-hole. Christy, thank you so much. Have a great rest of your week and enjoy all those amazing places you're going to go. Oh, don't sleep on that food. Go get some of that food by the people who know how to cook it. Absolutely. In all those places.
Absolutely.
Oh, and then when you get back, let me know if in Morocco they still eat with their fingers, even after COVID. That's going to creep me out.
That is a little creepy.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Opening music is the song Magnolia from the 2001 album Intransigence, used with permission from Douglas Miles Clark. Closing music is from the song Say My Name off the 2021 album Underdog Anthems, used with permission from Jax Hollow. If you like the show, tell a friend, subscribe, and rate and review the show on iTunes and wherever else you download podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel. All the episodes are available there as well. Check me out on Vero at Fascination Street Pod and TikTok at Fascination Street Pod. And again, thanks for listening.